Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. This is Lou Cavalli. Elizabeth Cuppet Cavalli and I have been bringing you this hard-hitting news program since 2003. Well, here we are. Now it's less than a week away from President Trump's second inauguration. We're going to look back to begin the program at one of the challenges we face as a nation that we covered several years ago. And here's a short excerpt from that past program and explaining that threat.
Now, we really want to move on and get into our information. Lou and I have heard former House Representative Roscoe Bartlett, and he's such a strong constitutionalist, and he was a great patriot, and he was forced out by Maryland's unethical practice of gerrymandering, redistricting in the western part of Maryland. And he was such a great guy that during the Iraq War, he had shipments of apples that came from western Maryland sent to our troops, lots of human kinds of things. Well, he told a radio interviewer a year or two ago that he has set up a home for his family in rural West Virginia to prepare to live should this catastrophe strike the U.S. Lou, let's get right into what it is.
Yes, Elizabeth. WorldNet Daily's recent article highlights this crucial concern for all of us. It's entitled, Obama Holdovers Exposing U.S. to Possible EMP Attack, Washington. There's no question that the United States is vulnerable to an electromagnetic pulse attack that could result in mass starvation and the death of about 90% of the American population, a nuclear strategist warns. But the deep state, those entrenched bureaucrats whose loyalties likely lie with the previous administration, under which they got their jobs, is indifferent. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, a nuclear strategist formerly with the CIA, who served as chief of staff of the Congressional EMP Commission until it was terminated in September, the same month North Korea tested a hydrogen bomb, which he described as capable of a super powerful EMP attack, said liberal Democrats still are running a lot of Washington even after President Trump's election. Quote, the people who sabotaged the EMP Commission, Obama holdovers, are still at the Department of Defense. They have not been replaced by the Trump administration. This is happening not just with the very vitally important EMP Commission, he said. And again in quotes, our society, the Trump administration, and the people who voted for Trump are paying for the failure of Congress to support Trump appointees quickly. At the same time, during the Obama administration, Obama had twice as many appointees appointed to positions in government than Trump has. It's not President Trump's fault. These people are undermining and opposing the policies that President Trump has enacted, including the case of the EMP Commission. Obama administration bureaucrats who believed Hillary Clinton would win the 2016 presidential election did everything they could to sabotage and undermine the commission, Pry said. He went on to say, quote, they held back money for a whole year. They held back security clearances. They tried to stop the commission staff from working, arguing that, quote, you need a contract in order to work for the EMP Commission, unquote. They wouldn't even let me work or other staff pro bono. We did it anyway. Had Hillary won, we would never have received any of our funding or security clearances. It was all after she clearly lost and Congress intervened that they relented at the last minute. A commission that was supposed to have been able to work 18 months at EMP ended up with resources and support from the Department of Defense that enabled us to put in 6 months of work. That's no way to provide for the national security of the country against an existential threat like EMP, unquote. WND, that's WorldNet Daily, reported only last month that a congressional subcommittee on Homeland Security heard the bad news from experts who have been studying America's vulnerability to an existential threat, a real-life, quote-unquote, doomsday scenario. The threat of a North Korean nuclear attack on the U.S. is almost unimaginably worse than turning a city like Chicago or Denver into ashes, they testified. If just one of the nuclear weapons North Korea is now known to possess could be directed toward the heartland of the U.S. and detonated in the upper atmosphere, it could fry the electrical grid with an electromagnetic pulse, paralyze communications and transportation nationwide, instantly plunge the country back into a 19th-century style existence, and cause 90% of Americans to starve to death in 1 year. An EMP attack likely would come from the explosion of a nuclear bomb at altitude over the United States. Its shockwaves would disrupt all electronics in line of sight, including systems that deliver food, fuel, energy, and communications to Americans. The result would be a run on food currently in stores and starvation when those supplies failed, as replacements would be impossible without those delivery systems. And as far as Elizabeth and I can tell, nothing has been done about this threat of an EMP attack during the Biden years. So this is going to be faced, or something that Mr. Trump will have to face in the coming years. And there are other dangers as well.
And we can see the contrast of the open borders in Europe. There was a report here from the Daily Wire, and this was October 31st, 2017. It's appropriate that it was on Halloween, because what could be more macabre than this? UK wants to give ISIS housing if they promise not to kill infidels, by Davis. As the Islamic State terror group's caliphate falls, European governments are now grappling with the question of how to deal with the thousands of radicalized Muslims raised on the continent who left their homes to fight in the Middle East but will now be returning to their homelands. Reportedly, the British government is considering a plan that would essentially bribe the terrorists and terrorist suspects returning to the UK from Syria to keep them peaceful. The UK Daily Mail reported. The Daily Mail claims to have viewed documents that show the British government is going to launch Operation Constraint, which would effectively give extremists free housing in exchange for a promise not to engage in terrorist violence in Britain. Up to 20,000 terrorists could be targeted using this program, which is reportedly slated to begin next year. We are planning a number of pilots to explore the best way to diverting such people from terrorism and extremist activity, an anonymous source told the Daily Mail. Why don't they just give them lollipops, read them bedtime stories, and tuck them in at night? That's about as efficient as this insane proposal. Has the British government completely lost its mind? I can't believe I have to say this, but common sense should dictate that you can't bribe people into not committing mass murder. I mean, seriously. How on earth does the British government think this is a good idea? Plus, people who are okay with blowing themselves up probably don't care too much about housing. Britain is no stranger to terrorist violence. Until the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, it was engaged in a long-running guerrilla war against Northern Irish separatists who regularly staged car bomb and other attacks in both Northern Ireland and in England. The governments that fought the Irish Republican Army would never have dreamed of offering the IRA free housing in exchange for peace. Now, in an era of radical Islamic terrorism in Europe and attacks in the UK, Britain has already seen what just a handful of terrorists can do. British citizens, quote, infidels to the terrorists, have died, and entire cities have been locked down for hours on end because of a handful of attacks. Rather than try to coddle these evil individuals, the government should just throw them in jail for a couple decades. That's where they belong. Sadly, this sort of strategy just shows how paralyzed some governments are by political correctness. These people don't seem to be able to accept the fact that you can't mollify the enemy. Not everything in this world can be fixed with free stuff. Sorry, Bernie. There are people who are going to try to kill the innocent no matter what. And there is a very limited range of options when dealing with them. Thankfully, the United States now has a government that knows that the best way to deal with terrorists is to lock them up or find them on the battlefield and send them to meet their 72 virgins. Let's hope our friends across the pond wake up before they start giving terrorists money. If not, the consequences could be deadly. So, we need some valuable background about what we reported on a prior program. We reported about Ed Klein's new book, and we have a little bit more here from News with Views about this. A new book by a former editor-in-chief of the New York Times Magazine and best-selling author reveals for the first time an FBI field report about the collusion between American anti-Trump radicals and foreign ISIS Al-Qaeda operatives. In his latest book, All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump, Edward Klein reveals to the public findings from an FBI investigation into the shocking ties between far-left radicals in America and Islamist extremists. The FBI report was delivered to Acting Director Andrew McCabe on July 11, 2017. While certain names have been redacted, Klein reveals how the FBI followed a group of Americans, these were anarchist radicals, who traveled to Germany to join their German counterpart, Antifascistische Action, I hope I've pronounced that right, to protest Trump's attendance at a meeting of G20 leaders and central bank governors. Evidence gathered from a variety of intelligence sources showed the Americans took part in the violence there. Quote, there is also evidence of meetings between these individuals and associates of ISIS, making some sort of common cause with Americans who are determined to commit violence against the U.S. makes them potentially very useful to radical Islam, writes Klein based on the report. Klein notes that the FBI paid particular attention to a group of anarchists from Oakland, sister city to Berkeley, California, site of the campus of University of California at Berkeley, and the scene of several violent protests.
Next, we have some economic and other news reports that suggest America is in danger of coming judgment. Hal Turner on his Friday night program reported on a homeless man who was spotted trying to set fires with several butane lighters. Police arrested him, according to Turner, and found he possessed 5 cell phones and also a UN prepaid debit card. Violating all common sense, the man was inexplicably released by police without being charged with anything. And Hal Turner also featured an audio tape on his Friday broadcast. Just 2 days ago, on the tape, an investigative reporter revealed shocking facts about Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. It seems she has a background that is much more questionable and nefarious than the puzzling fact that she was far away in Ghana, Africa, when the Pacific Palisades fire broke out. This in spite of the fact that she had been informed that the weather conditions and the dryness were ripe for a major conflagration. It's also worth noting that she had cut $15 million from the L.A. Fire Department's budget. According to the tape of the reporter's information, Bass had made numerous trips to Castro's Cuba. During one period, she visited Cuba about every 6 months. Bass went to hear Castro speak live on at least 4 occasions. When Fidel Castro died, she had high praise for the Cuban dictator. Most of you are aware of the close relationship that Barack Obama had with communist activist Frank Marshall Davis. Many, in fact, believe Davis was Barack's real father. Frank's close comrade was Bill Ayers. Valerie Jarrett and her father were part of this mentality to overthrow the American Republic and replace it with a Marxist state. And we're going to tell you about some intimidation we had in the past. We've only had that kind of intimidation once in all our years of broadcasting from 2003 to 2025. And we had the most dramatic, prolific warning flight over our home. We applaud Hal Turner for uncovering the possible traitorous sellout of America through persons at the highest levels of government and academia. Tonight we're going to play an excerpt from the past that provoked such close scrutiny and intimidation. Before we do that, however, we have some up-to-date 2025 news that we want to bring to your attention. First, this came from YouTube.com, and it's credited to the Epic Economist and dated December 20th, 2024. The title, Go to Your Local Bank and Stock Up on Cash While You Can, because widespread outages are coming. If you're still trusting banks with your life savings, stop everything you're doing, and pay very close attention to the warnings being shared by billionaire investors, Wall Street analysts, strategists, and multiple real estate industry leaders that we're about to report. Millions of Americans are in danger of losing everything they have ever fought for. And the worst part is that many of them don't even know it. Thousands of big U.S. banks are now facing an unprecedented wave of distress that could completely wipe out depositor savings accounts in 2025. This is very serious, folks. Just a few days ago, Barry Sternlicht, the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of the $115 billion real estate giant, Starwood Capital Group, came forward to alert the public about the impending collapse of the U.S. banking system. The head of one of the biggest real estate companies in the country is observing huge distortions in the market happenings as we speak. And now, from naturalnews.com, December 17th, 2024, some dire warnings. The economy is on the brink of collapse with job market decline, real estate sector struggles, and surging inflation. Despite government claims of prosperity, job openings have plummeted, particularly in healthcare, government, and manufacturing, with 78,000 manufacturing jobs lost in the last 3 months and 85,000 in the past 6 months. Thousands of stores have closed, with major retailers like Party City and Family Dollar nearing bankruptcy, reflecting widespread economic devastation. And this is Lou speaking now. I'm going to interject the fact that Party City may have filed for bankruptcy, but has closed all of its stores, every last one. We also see that Macy's is going to close 66 stores in 2025. Kohl's is predicted to be closing 27 stores. Other companies planning to close include some of the stores, those that perform poorly, include Walmart, Starbucks, Dollar Tree, Office Depot, Foot Locker, Sears, CVS, and Advance Auto Parts, and Walgreens. And I'm sure there are many others. Now, back to the article from Natural News. Rising costs of essential goods like food and housing are straining household budgets, forcing many Americans to cut back on necessities. The government has downplayed the crisis, failing to implement effective policies to address job creation, inflation, and manufacturing sector stabilization, risking further economic decline. The signs of an impending economic collapse are everywhere, yet the government continues to paint a rosy picture of prosperity. The truth, however, is far grimmer than official reports would have us believe. The data doesn't lie, and the numbers reveal an economy teetering on the edge of disaster. The American people have been misled, and the consequences of this deception will be catastrophic. The job market, once a pillar of stability, is now crumbling. The number of job openings in the United States has plummeted to levels not seen in decades. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were 7.4 million unfilled jobs at the end of September, a significant drop from the 12 million openings that existed just a few years ago. This decline is especially alarming in industries that have driven recent job growth, such as healthcare and government. The manufacturing sector, once a backbone of the American economy, has shed 78,000 jobs in the last 3 months alone. These losses are not isolated incidents. They are part of a broader trend that signals a deepening economic crisis. The retail sector is also in free fall. Thousands of stores have already shuttered their doors in 2024, and the outlook for 2025 is even bleaker. Major retailers, as we said, like Party City and Family Dollar, are on the brink of bankruptcy with hundreds of locations already closed. The landscape in many parts of the country is littered with boarded up businesses, a stark reminder of the economic devastation that has already taken hold. This is not the picture of a thriving economy. It is the reality of a nation in decline. Inflation, which has been touted as under control, is surging once again. The cost of essential goods like food and housing continues to strain household budgets, forcing many Americans to cut back on basic necessities just to keep the lights on. A recent survey found that over a third of U.S. households have had to reduce spending to afford energy bills. This is not the sign of a healthy economy. It is a symptom of a system in crisis. The government's response to this economic turmoil has been woefully inadequate. Instead of addressing the root cause or causes of the problem, officials have chosen to downplay the severity of the situation. The official narrative is one of recovery and resilience, but the data tells a different story. The truth is that we are in the midst of a major economic downturn, and the situation is only getting worse. The manufacturing sector, which has long been a source of pride for the United States, is in dire straits. Job losses in this sector have reached alarming levels, 85,000 jobs lost in the past 6 months alone. The ongoing strikes at Boeing and other major manufacturers have only exacerbated the problem, leading to further job losses and disruptions in the supply chain. This is not the environment for economic growth. It's a harbinger of further decline. And in a similar vein, we have a warning. Rockefeller chair warns U.S. stock market will see catastrophic crash. This is from KingWorldNews.com, December 11th, 2024. Rockefeller International Chair Rushir Sharma warned the U.S. stock market will see a catastrophic crash. He also warned, quote, America is overowned, overvalued, and overhyped to a degree never seen before, unquote. And he compared today's jubilation to the Roaring Twenties, which was followed by the Great Depression. King World News agrees with his assessment and cautions investors to get prepared. And then we have an article, actually it's a reprint of an older article, entitled David Wilkerson, Global Economic Collapse Begins in Germany. This was posted from Z3News.com, and it was December 16th, 2024 that it was published. But the original article was published in May 11th, 2015, and the authors say this is being reposted due to recent financial troubles at Germany's largest bank, Deutsche Bank. In my previous post, this is by James Bailey, Why the Greek Drama Will Soon Become a Tragedy, I shared a prophetic vision with the late David Wilkerson, in which he warned of bank runs starting in the United States within about two weeks after the first country goes bankrupt. The purpose of this post is to clarify what he meant. With all the focus on Greece, it would be easy to assume they will be the first country to default. However, in another message, David Wilkerson said he saw it starting in Germany. So we could see a scenario where Greece misses one or more loan payments without causing a financial meltdown for European banks, at least not right away. However, the losses caused by the Greek default would make it very hard for European financial institutions to absorb, which could then cause Germany's economy to collapse. The whole system would start coming unglued. As Europe's largest economy, Germany has been carrying more than their fair share of the load in the European Union. Over the past 5 years, they have been a major contributor to bail out funds, not only for Greece, but also Portugal, Italy, Ireland, and Spain. In the process, they have put themselves at risk if any of those nations default. Today we see Greece reaching a critical point of needing additional funds to avoid a banking crisis. However, Germany cannot continue to support the weaker European nations forever. After 5 years of playing extend and pretend, the German people are weary of sending their hard-earned money to bail out other nations, especially Greece, because they are not showing signs of recovering and are not complying with the terms of the loans. But now the Germans have put themselves in a predicament because they have extended so much credit to Greece that a default there could take down Germany. Connected with that, German government collapses. No confidence vote triggers snap elections. This was from Hal Turner, RadioShow.com, December 16th, 2024. The most unpopular German chancellor in recorded history, Olaf Scholz, suffered another humiliation today as he lost a vote of confidence in Parliament, opening the way for snap elections on 2025. Scholz was forced to call today's vote and was widely expected to lose. But the embattled leader also calculated that an early election was his only chance of maintaining his party's political prospects. BBC reported, it comes around 2 months after the collapse of Scholz's three-party coalition government, which left the embattled chancellor leading a minority administration. Then we have some more European news. NATO orders citizens to sacrifice, quote, luxuries, unquote, and embrace, quote, wartime mindset to prepare for World War III. This was from thepeoplesvoice.tv by Baxter Dimitri, December 15th. 2024. The threat of World War III looms larger as Mark Rutte, NATO's new Secretary General and former Dutch Prime Minister, delivers a chilling warning urging citizens of NATO countries, including the U.S., to adopt a, quote, wartime mindset, unquote, and prepare for major sacrifices. And then we come back to North America. Canada imprisoning citizens who refuse to take government-mandated medication. Also from The People's Voice by Baxter Dimitri, December 15th, 2024. Canadian authorities have begun imprisoning citizens who refuse to comply with state-mandated medication. In an alarming escalation of the Trudeau government's authoritarian control. And we have UN vows to imprison ex-users who share, quote, misinformation, unquote, online. And when I saw that, this is Lou speaking, I immediately thought to myself, who decides what's misinformation? But getting back to the article, this was from The People's Voice, December 16th, by Sean Eddie Tabatabai. The United Nations has ordered world leaders to begin arresting citizens who share content on social media sites that challenge the official narrative. So I guess we can see, this is Lou again, guess we can see who decides what's misinformation, anything that goes against the big boys. Then we have meet Syria's new U.S.-backed leader, Mohammed al-Jawlani, who the U.S. government called, quote, terrorist, unquote, and offered $10 million reward for. This was from Hal Turner, radioshow.com, December 9th, 2024. Mohammed al-Jawlani is the new leader of Syria after the terrorist group, HTS, short for Hay at Tahrir al-Sham, overthrew the government of President Bashar al-Assad this past weekend. The new leader had a $10 million bounty on his head from the USA for being a, quote, specially designated international terrorist, unquote. Now the U.S. embraces him. Here we have from SlayNews.com by Frank Bergman, November 8, 2024. UN demands digital IDs for the public to tackle hate speech. The globalist United Nations is calling on world governments to mandate digital IDs for members of the general public as part of a plan to allegedly tackle, quote, hate speech, unquote. A UN committee has adopted two resolutions that seek to usher in global digital IDs. One of the resolutions orders the UN's Department of Global Communications to develop rules for, quote, new and traditional media to address hate speech narratives, unquote. The fourth committee, Special Political Decolonization, also adopted a resolution further promoting the UN's Our Common Agenda plan. The plan proposes, among other tyrannical goals, a bank account-linked digital ID for all citizens who wish to participate in society. The fourth committee resolution also advances the UN Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, UN Pact for the Future, and Global Digital Compact. All the plans are pushing for digital IDs, censorship, and mass surveillance. The schemes are all backed by major countries. Ahead of the adoption of the documents, representatives of a number of countries spoke in favor of expanded censorship under the UN umbrella. Italy's delegate advocated strongly for the use of AI in combating, quote, misinformation and disinformation, unquote. The UK's socialist government representative reiterated the country's commitment to the UN Pact for the Future and Global Digital Compact. The UN Pact includes the far-reaching censorship law, Online Safety Act. The UN official noted that the law forces companies to, quote, remove illegal online content, including illegal mis- and disinformation generated by AI, unquote. In addition, the UK remains committed to characterizing so-called misinformation as a major threat. The European Union has also essentially co-signed the pact along with El Salvador, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Malaysia. The unelected EU is also expressing deep concern over disinformation. Again, that word is in quotation marks. Disinformation of various types and calling for the UN to work more on countering it. Pakistan's delegate remarked that big tech companies should be collaborated with. And that, again, is in quotes, collaborated with. The nation warned that Meta and Google should not put profit before the need to join the war on disinformation. As for individuals accused of spreading disinformation, Pakistan proposes to make use of the UN's global principles for information integrity. The plan is designed to promote not only fighting misinformation and hate speech, but also censoring and demonetizing content algorithmically. However, a meeting before the adoption of the text also heard some dissenting voices, notably that of Argentina. That country's representative raised concerns that the term hate speech can be abused by those wishing to stifle pluralistic debate. According to a UN press release, this delegate disassociated himself from those paragraphs in the document that refer to hate speech. And this is in quotes, those documents that refer to, quote, hate speech, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, and our common agenda, unquote. Then we have, switching over to another concern that we all must have in the coming months, a top gastroenterologist sounds alarm. COVID vaccinated lacking key gut bacteria necessary for the immune system. This was September 2nd, 2024, from the People's Voice, written by Baxter Dimitri. COVID vaccinated individuals are lacking in bifidobacteria, a healthy gut bacteria essential for the immune system, according to groundbreaking research by gastroenterologist Dr. Sabine Hazen, which explains why the immune systems of the vaccinated have been destroyed. And then also from the People's Voice, this time December 5th, by Neam Harris, data shows alarming 66% surge in heart attacks in slim young Americans since 2020. Disturbing new data shows that heart attacks in young American adults have surged 66% since 2020, with experts blaming a sharp rise in myocarditis during the COVID pandemic. Around 0.3% of fit and slim Americans between the ages of 18 to 44 had a heart attack in 2019, and that rose to 0.5%, or 1 in 200 last year. The Mail Online reports, while that may seem like a relatively low number, it represents a 66% increase in cases in just 4 years, which doctors call alarming. It also means that 1 in 5 heart attack patients are now younger than 40. A number of factors are thought to be at play, including rampant drug use, obesity, sedentary lifestyles, and bad diets. But the timing strongly implies that COVID pandemic has played a role. And I'll insert there, this is Lou speaking, although this article doesn't go into it in depth, we certainly think that the so-called vaccines played a part in this. Going on, the virus itself causes widespread inflammation in the body that can damage the heart or lead to blood clots. Depression, anxiety, and stress also surged among young people during lockdowns, and all three have been linked to heart attacks. Dr. Deepak Bhatt, the director of the Mount Sinai Puster Heart Hospital, told Today, quote, there are definitely more younger people coming in with heart attacks. And he said, also, there's data to back that up. What's driving that is more controversial, unquote. There were millions fewer visits to doctors during the early years of the pandemic, which means the chronic conditions that may contribute to heart disease risk went unnoticed. An increase in the number of young people developing type 2 diabetes, which is associated with thicker and stickier blood, which raises the risk of blood clots and, in turn, heart attacks. But in many doctors' views, the timing is simply too coincidental for COVID not to be involved. Studies have shown that once in the body, the virus can cause the heart to become inflamed, a condition known as myocarditis, leading to damage that makes it harder to pump blood around the body. Over time, in extreme cases, this can damage the organ to the point it becomes too weak to adequately pump enough blood to the rest of the body, causing heart failure. But again, we'll just mention that much of the evidence we've seen ties this in, especially that myocarditis, with not the disease itself, but the so-called vaccines that were supposed to be safe and effective and have caused innumerable problems for those who have taken the vaccines. And then we have another article, drones spotted near at least 17 military bases located next to Chinese-owned land in the United States. This was from NewYorkPost.com by Isabel Vincent and Mary Kay Jacob, published December 18th, 2024. at least 17 military bases adjacent to Chinese-owned farmland across the U.S. have experienced a rash of drone sightings in recent weeks, the Post has learned. Mysterious drones have been reported near military bases in Hawaii and by installations in Utah, California, Maine, and Florida, among other facilities scattered throughout the country. The Post previously identified 19 military bases that lie close to farmland bought up by Chinese-owned companies, a situation that has worried China analysts who feared the communist country would use the land to spy on U.S. military operations. All of those facilities, apart from Grand Forks Air Force Base in North Dakota and Joint Base San Antonio Camp Bullis in Texas, had reports of drones either attempting to fly over their bases or nearby, according to local reports. And now, we told you about an article that we read several years back, and after that, we had the most helicopter intimidation we have ever had. So now we're going to bring you a portion of that article, and we're going to let you hear what it was that brought about that intimidation that obviously angered the powers that be.
This article was written by Tom DeWeese in the DeWeese Report, January 2009.
Barack Obama and the weatherman. Since just before the election of Barack Obama in November, and again, this is written in 2009, it has been interesting and quite shocking that a 40-year-old, seemingly forgotten radical group called Weathermen is getting so much attention. Of course, Obama denies any connection to old Weathermen. Here's a quick history of the Weathermen and why it's relevant to a new president calling for an undefined, quote, change, unquote. You've heard the names, the famous names, Bill Ayers, Mark Rudd, Bernardine Dorn, and Jeff Jones, among others. Today, Ayers describes himself as a professor. Dorn is his wife and a clinical law professor. Jeff Jones, predictably, is an environmentalist and political consultant, and Mark Rudd is now a teacher. Just normal Americans living their lives. Really? In 1962, Students for a Democratic Society, SDS, was born. It was a radical organization of college students. SDS quickly became the opposition to the Vietnam War. They organized demonstrations on college campuses across the nation to mobilize students to take, quote, direct action, unquote, against, quote, racism, poverty, and war, unquote. In 1963, SDS got involved in community organizing, teaming up with the Black Panthers, the Hispanic Young Lords, and other radical organizations. By 1966, SDS was moving in a revolutionary Marxist direction. Their demonstrations and marches became violent clashes with police, many turning into riots. About the same time, SDS was joined by the Progressive Labor Party, PL, a self-styled Marxist-Leninist Maoist party dedicated to implementing communist ideology. By 1969, a majority of SDS found the PL's strict Marxist ideology too restraining, hurting organizing and recruiting efforts. At the same time, SDS leaders were looking for a more long-term agenda to bring about a communist revolution in the United States. Simply fighting the war was too limiting. In June 1969, SDS held a raucous convention in which the PL was tossed out of SDS and a new faction took control. That faction was called Weathermen. It issued a long, rambling manifesto detailing the future direction of the movement. The document was entitled, "You Don't Need the Weatherman to Know Which Way the Wind Blows." The title was taken from a Bob Dylan song. The manifesto detailed Weatherman ideology and the means to create a Marxist revolution in America. They always spelled that with a K, America, A-M-E-R-I-K-A. Some of its chapters or chapter titles include the struggle for socialist self-determination, black liberation means revolution, anti-imperialist revolution, and the United Front, the revolutionary youth movement, class analysis, and repression and revolution. The document called for a class war against America's free market society. It talked of joining up with Marxist revolutions around the world, in China, in Cuba, and more. It called for the creation of a, quote-unquote, revolutionary party. Above all, it called for war against what Weathermen called America, again spelled with that K. Why is that significant today? Because the authors of the document were the leaders of Weatherman, Mark Rudd, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, Jeff Jones, and others. Weatherman's first public act was what it called Days of Rage. It called on students to leave their classrooms and engage in 3 days of violence and street demonstrations. They smashed windows of businesses and cars and attacked police lines. Mark Rudd himself was arrested in Chicago while leading the violence. The result of the 3 days of violence was 287 people arrested, 800 automobiles, and 600 windows were smashed. The combined bail was over $2 million. In spite of the damage, Weatherman was disappointed with the turnout of demonstrators. They had hoped to bring thousands to the streets rather than the 300 to 500 who turned out. Mark Rudd and the other Weathermen concluded that white people weren't ready to engage in revolution, as did their, quote, black brothers, unquote, and the Black Panthers. To win, decided the Weathermen, whites had to share some of the cost of revolution by, quote, picking up the gun, unquote. To not do so was racist, they believed. That decision led Weatherman leaders, Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones, to make the decision to declare war on imperialist America by going underground to foster direct violence against the states.
They then became known as the Weather Underground. During their reign of terror, the Weather Underground bombed corporate headquarters, burned ROTC buildings and college campuses, and even planted a bomb in the U.S. Capitol building. They used anti-personnel bombs filled with nails, staples, and other shrapnel designed to hurt and kill people. Several of those bombs were planted in police stations, resulting in the murder of Police Sergeant Brian McDonnell in San Francisco. Another officer was permanently maimed, and two others were injured in that attack. A police informant, Larry Grathwall, who, working inside the Weather Underground, reported that Bill Ayers planned the bombing and Bernardine Dorn planted it. There were more such bombings in other cities. Later, Mark Rudd was the sole survivor of a bomb explosion that went off as he was building it in a Weather Underground safe house in New York. That bomb and more were to be placed in a dance hall at the Fort Dix Army Base. They would have killed hundreds of soldiers and their dates. As they engaged in their revolution, the Underground would from time to time issue communiques, much like Osama bin Laden in a later era, to send messages to followers. In communique number one, from the Weather Underground, it reads in part, "Hello, this is Bernardine Dorn. I'm going to read a declaration of a state of war, emphasis hers. In the document," she warned, "within the next 14 days, we will attack a symbol or institution of American injustice." It was issued on May 21, 1970. On June 9, 1970 came communique number two from the Weather Underground. It reported, "Tonight at 7 p.m. we blew up the New York City police headquarters. The pigs in this country are our enemies. The time is now. Political power grows out of a gun, a Molotov, a riot, a commune, and from the soul of the people." There's much more to the history of violence and revolution pulled off or attempted by Ayers, Rudd, Dorn, and Jones, and others in their clan. But these examples should give anyone enough of an idea as to their dedication to destroying America. But what does that have to do with today? And how does it connect to Barack Obama? The bad boys and girls of the 60s like to portray themselves as just some college kids. They got a little carried away. "It's in the past," says the news media. "It has nothing to do with today or Barack Obama," say his supporters. It is vital that Americans understand that these were dedicated revolutionaries determined to destroy America by violence if necessary. They used every means possible to recruit America's youth into their revolt. They marched in the street, chanted pro-Mao slogans, started riots, disrupted schools, burned college buildings, and eventually bombed symbols of the American establishment they hated, resulting in the death and maiming of police officers sworn to protect it. And I have to interject here. What does this sound like? Doesn't this sound like Antifa? An update? Back to the article. These were not just overactive college kids. The agenda they followed sought to destroy every aspect of American life. They hated private property and wanted it all redistributed with no ownership, like the communes they chose to live on. They hated free enterprise and wanted all business run by the workers, no bosses, no owners. The only private business they would tolerate were those businesses that should be, they would tolerate, were those run by individuals that hired no one. They knew to achieve these things, they had to start by changing the history taught to a young generation in the schools. They hated religion and wanted to run it out of the country. They hated the family unit, saying it subjugated women who should be liberated. They sought to build divides between the rich and the poor, creating a class struggle in America that didn't really exist before, and they didn't hesitate to use violence to achieve their goals.
When the violence failed, the Weathermen Corps and their followers didn't give up or fade away. They remained underground in a new way. They melted into society. They took teaching positions in college to reach the younger generation. They took jobs in the media to take control of the message. They worked their way up in the hated corporations to gain control of policy. And they surged into government at all levels, boring into the core of America to expose, I should say, to impose their agenda at every chance, from the federal government to state legislatures to city councils. Today, for example, we have Congressman Bobby Seale, one of the infamous Chicago Eight, State Senator Tom Hayden, the founder of the SDS, and another of the Chicago Eight. It's interesting to note that a great number of the members of the revolution went into the environmental movement, unable to get Americans to outright accept Marxist ideology in their revolution. Instead, they wrapped it all in a nice green blanket of environmental protection. Ever since, under the banner of environmental protection, Americans have happily tossed their liberties on the bonfire like a good old-fashioned book burning. They accepted the premise that private property and business must be controlled or destroyed simply for the good of the environment. It's not just a happy coincidence. In this way, the revolution of the 60s is now progressing at a rapid pace, and one of Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones. Ayers took the route into education as a professor, but that certainly hasn't replaced his activism for the cause of communism. Recently, he traveled to the new red Mecca, Venezuela, a nation quickly falling behind a new red curtain of tyranny under Hugo Chavez.
And may I interject there? We'll update Tom DeWeese's article by saying now a lot of the former teachers and people who were middle-class women, they're earning their living as prostitutes by going into Guatemala. It has become such a fallen country. So we can see what the fruits of communism are in Marxism. Go ahead, Lou.
Ayers is influential enough with a new American-hating dictator to meet with him and appear on the same platform. There, Ayers proclaimed his support for, quote, the profound educational reforms underway here in Venezuela under the leadership of President Chavez. We share this belief that education is the motor force of revolution. I look forward to seeing how you continue to overcome the failings of capitalist education as you seek to create something truly new and deeply humane, unquote. Does it sound like Ayers has changed a single stripe from his college activist days? Mark Rudd, also in education, he feels at home there. After all, he is the man who shut down Columbia University with a student strike in the 60s, and he is still active in the cause. Recently, he turned up making comments on a radical blog called Ragblog, where he attempted to calm nervous, quote-unquote, progressives, a new euphemism coined a few years back to provide cover for those who don't want to be called communists. The, quote, progressives were growing nervous by the cabinet appointments Obama has been making. These people are so radical that they actually consider Hillary Clinton to be from the right. Of course, keeping a bunch of old Clintonistas, not to mention a Bush holdover like Secretary of State Gates, make that Secretary of Defense Gates, has caused great concern for those who thought Obama was the answer to the revolution. Said Rudd, the Obama appointments are part of a deliberate strategy to, quote, feign to the right, quote, unquote, and move to the left. He said, quote, any other strategy invites sure defeat, unquote. Rudd, to be sure, wants Obama to be victorious in his goals. Now, why would that be? Rudd is a dedicated communist, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, seeking to destroy the American way of life.
And we now recall that William F. Jasper of the New American Magazine exposed that actually Antifa is more or less a front for the American Revolutionary Communist Party. If you check it out, you'll find a lot of information on that. So things are not as they seem, and we also tell all of you listeners that you can't afford to become complacent. You can be concerned about the EMP, and you can think about what you can do for your family with food and with other items to survive. And we also tell you that you cannot be complacent to think that everything is going to be hunky-dory. How about it, Lou?
That's right. And going on, Jones is now a political consultant and a dedicated environmentalist. One of his clients is the Natural Resources Defense Council, a radical environmental group made up of some of the most radical and most vicious lawyers ever assembled. Some on Capitol Hill have called them a street gang. They are revolutionaries in suits. They intimidate companies with their lawsuits and delight in suing the government to get their way. Their lawsuits help stop the drilling of American oil and American logging and more. And when they win, they fill their coffers with taxpayer money as reimbursement for their legal costs. It's the proper place for a former underground terrorist. Dawn is Ayers' wife. They went underground together in the old days of the revolution. Today, she continues to spread her brand of revolution by reaching into the community of families as a clinical law professor and director of the Children and Family Justice Center at Northwestern University. She forces children's rights today to create tomorrow's revolutionaries. Still, what is the Obama connection to these dedicated revolutionaries? It's perhaps ironic that all four former weathermen terrorists today work through an organization called Movement for a Democratic Society. That organization is the parent to another one called Progressives for Obama. They raised funds for Obama. They promoted his candidacy, and they helped to recruit activists to support him. In the past 40 years, Ayers, Dorn, Rudd, and Jones have not been heard from in the mainstream media. They have not been an issue in a presidential election. They have not openly promoted or supported a candidate, snubbing even John Kerry and Bill and Hillary Clinton as not being revolutionary enough for their agenda for the destruction of America. Until now. Until Barack Obama. These four are dedicated Marxist revolutionaries. Why now? Why Obama? You don't need a weatherman to know why. Now, to wrap things up today, we have a couple of other articles that we think are really well worth hearing. But before I get to that, we talked a little bit about the viruses and the vaccines. If you'd like a copy of our book, Chaos, I'll Make That COVID and Coming Chaos, it's free. You can get a copy just by writing to me. The address, I'll repeat it a couple of times, is Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. And if you can help us out, we and our donors pay for this program. We don't have sponsors. We don't have commercials. We don't have any interruptions to the news. You can hear the program straight through without having to put up with commercials. So if you can help us out to keep the program on the air, you can write to that same address. You can send checks, money orders, cash, and you can send it to me, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Now we have a couple of interesting things. First of all, we talked a little bit about some illnesses. Here's a special one from the People's Voice. This is by Neam Harris. On the last day of the year, December 31st, 2024, people reporting that strange fog has made them sick. Social media users have been claiming that they have been suffering ill health after coming into contact with fog. For the past week, it seems that several countries have been shrouded in an eerie, dense fog that smells like chemicals and sparkles with strange particles. People have been claiming that this fog has been causing sore throats and flu-like symptoms. It has also caused many flights to be canceled. And a report by InfoWars quoted a man who asked, quote, anyone else notice since this fog arrived on Christmas Day, you have sore throat, you started to feel lethargic, you lost your appetite, you felt flu-y, you couldn't do anything, you didn't have any energy, sweat, couldn't sleep, unquote. The TikTok user documented that, adding he believed the fog contained chemicals intended to make people sick. The man concluded by asking fellow TikTok users if they've experienced any symptoms. One user responded, I'm not going to lie. I legit got a sore throat after the fog. Another stated, lots of headaches since the fog. And one person, I think this was a Twitter, we've got people in Kentucky, we've got people in Sweden, we've got people in Finland, all reporting the same thing. The fog has made them sick, the man revealed. Oh, that was on TikTok. TikTok. Another TikTok user characterized the fog as a, quote, chemical fog, unquote, and described it smelled and tasted like sulfur. On X, another user described driving through a chemical fog, remarking they believed normal fog should produce water droplets on their windshield. They wrote, pay attention. fog should have moisture. I just drove through thick fog, which by definition is when water condenses and creates tiny water droplets. All my life I had to use windshield wipers in fog. Not anymore. This is dry chemical fog. Driving 30-plus minutes in fake fog. No way. Another ex-user claimed he, quote, got rapidly ill with cold flu symptoms, and it was after brief exposure to the fog. I'm really not trying to buy into the fog vid 24 conspiracy, where people are saying the thick blanket of fog over the UK that impacted us for about 3 days straight has made people ill, but I got rapidly ill with cold flu symptoms, and it was after brief exposure to fog. Still another person said, thick white fog outside that smells like chemicals. It made me lightheaded and dizzy. I now have shortness of breath. Notice all the particles in the air floating around. This is not good. 30 minutes earlier, the sky was red. The government is up to no good. Please speak up. Then we have two articles from the Fort Fairfield Journal. And their entries called Amstapo Update. And the subtitle says, chronicling the rise of the totalitarian American state police. The first one, December 14th. Police now have access to a piece of technology called Xaver, X-A-V-E-R, which is specifically designed to see through the walls of private homes in intricate detail from up to 300 feet away. When used without a search warrant, the use of the gear definitely violates the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which all police swore an oath to uphold. But many police officers don't take that oath seriously, and most of the citizens do not even understand their rights to begin with, because the schools that are supposed to teach those rights only teach boys they have a right to be girls if they think they are on any particular day, and girls can be boys if they think they are. Those are the only civil rights being taught in government-run public schools these days, which is why technology like Xaver is being implemented against us all in the first place. Once again, that is spelled X-A-V-E-R. And then another Amstapo update, again from the Fort Fairfield Maine Journal, December 1st. This is dated. It appeared in the December 11th issue. Police and military have access to a new piece of tech called Pulsar, P-U-L-S-A-R. Pulsar can identify all radio signals within its area of operation and jam them instantaneously. Pulsar can intercept and jam cell phones, radios, drones, and any other device emitting a radio signal. This allows government to effectively throw a blanket over an area and not let any information to the outside world in order to censor communications as they craft their fake narratives about an event. It's time to go back to private undertaking or undercover couriers carrying printed text and photos. And this is Lou speaking. That would be a valuable thing for the authorities to have with all these fires out in California. You can shut down all the news media that way.